Hey friends, this is Pastor Jordan. Welcome to the Voices of Hope podcast. On this podcast, we'll be talking with people from New Hope and beyond. We'll be talking to them about how their faith has impacted their unique journeys in their life. We hope that this podcast will give you hope in your own journey. As you struggle and wrestle with your faith, you will understand how others have done the same. In this episode, we'll talk to Nathan. Nathan is an FBI SWAT agent, as well as an active member at New Hope. Friends, enjoy the conversation.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Nate, I want to talk to you about, first, tell me a little bit about what led you to joining the FBI.
Well, my story probably starts before the FBI, really, to be honest. From the time I was a young boy, I was interested in law enforcement. I watched a lot of episodes of Chip growing up, and played a lot of imaginary, you know, cops and robbers. And I think just the general sort of draw to, you know, the guy or gal in a white hat and the service, you know, part of it was always appealing to me. And as I got older, I had the opportunity. I had a couple of friends, adult friends, that were really friends of my mom, that offered to take me out and, like, on ride-alongs with the, they were both with the sheriff's office where I lived, and I got to go out and, you know, experience it firsthand, and it was thrilling. I mean, it was awesome. And one of those deputies ended up becoming a very good friend of mine and a mentor, and he was a man of faith, and he shared with me early on, you know, that his service and his, in law enforcement was deeply connected with, you know, him being a follower of Christ. And I had grew up in the church, and you know, my faith was a big part of my upbringing and my life and my identity. And so, I probably at that young age had not made that connection, but after, you know, spending time with him and him sharing and sort of me reflecting, you know, I came to realize this is kind of a great combination of what I want to do, because I love the adrenaline, I love the sense of adventure, you know, I love the idea of being a part of the solution, you know, whether that's you know, helping someone that's been a victim of a crime or is broken down alongside the road, to, you know, someone who's, you know, experienced a traumatic event. You know, I think certain people just have a personality or drawn to that type of work, much like ministry, really. But it was a way that I could enjoy that excitement of, you know, of being a police officer, mm-hmm. but also a way of serving and being an extension of my faith and being a servant of Christ, and a way that I could do it every day. You know, like I was in it, and it turned out to be that way for sure. Like, it was what I conceptualized, you know, when I was trying to get through college and trying to get my first job. And then when I actually got on the job, it was even more, I think, than I had expected, because law enforcement is such a unique job in that, and I was thinking about this, and I think there's a lot of correlations with ministry. Yours is probably not quite as rough and tumble as law enforcement, but
we all see the underbelly of some things.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's both, you know, I often tell people, like, you interact with folks at some of, oftentimes, the worst times of their life, and sometimes the most joyous times of their life. You know, I mean, I've been, you know, when I was a trooper, been there when people have given birth on in an ambulance alongside the highway, to you know, work in crash scenes where, you know, on a Father's Day, a mother and her son were involved in an accident, and the 16-year-old son, you know, passes away, and, you know, having to go tell the family and, you know, sit with the family through those type of experiences, just to name a few. Not to mention the, you know, the impacts of arresting someone and taking their freedom away, and, you know, someone who's never thought that they would ever be handcuffed in the back of a police car, mm-hmm. you know,
And that has ripple effects too. It's not just them, but it's their families and
yes.
friends and everything.
Exactly. And a lot of those instances give rise to conversations that you would never have, you know, you may never have with someone you're close to, mm-hmm. let alone a complete stranger that's faced with the severe consequences of their actions or life and death type of situations. And so it was an opportunity, it was sort of an avenue for me to feel like I was living out my faith, you know, that I was doing God's work essentially. And every day I went on duty, I had an opportunity to do that. And there, you know, I think it's a calling. And not that you can't have a calling as an accountant or something else, but I just felt like it was a really a good way for me to you know, share my faith, or to really not share necessarily, because you can't go out there and, you know.
Yeah, to live out your faith.
To live out my faith, right, is a better way to put
actions,
it. Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Did you ever feel like a tension at any point about, like, your faith in the things you were seeing or taking care of? Or did it always feel like this calling of, I'm here to serve these people, and I'm here to be kind of a picture of Jesus to them in some ways? Or was there a part where you're just like, I don't think I can do this, I don't know if it fits with my faith?
No, you know, there was a time where, so I think for me personally, I had come to a realization, and I think anybody that comes into this line of work has to recognize that there are times where things are going to get down and dirty, right? You have to accept that your job is going to put you in conflict with people, sometimes physical conflict. And you have to accept that as part of the job, but then also recognizing, or sort of coming to terms with, that even though I may be causing someone a certain degree of discomfort or what they perceive as an injustice, that I'm doing what, if I'm acting within the scope and what I know to be, you know, ethical and moral, that I have to do my job. And that sometimes that creates a tension, right? Because, you know, how many times you're taking somebody to jail or you're interacting with someone and they're screaming at you, right? They're calling you bad names, and, you know, the last thing they see you as the face of Christ, right?
Right, right.
But at your core, you have to remind yourself, you know, as long as you're doing things for the right reasons and, you know, you're making decisions based on fact and not, you know, prejudice or, you know, preconceived ideas, that you're fulfilling your calling. And sometimes that puts you in conflict with people. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I personally feel strongly about is capital punishment. And I have had conversations with, you know, colleagues over the years and shared my thoughts. And it's probably no surprise that I'm in a minority in my profession that would oppose capital punishment. But, you know, it's always led to some spirited conversations. But when I tried out for the SWAT team when I was a trooper, the SWAT team leader actually came to me before I was accepted on the team and had a conversation with me, because he was concerned, because he had heard about some of my beliefs and thought that that would somehow influence my ability to be an effective operator under his command, you know. So I think that sometimes when you're trying to live out your faith, and not to say that I had it right necessarily, but it can put you in conflict and tension, even with some of your own folks that you work with, right? Because they may not understand, like, it's hard for them to reconcile. How can somebody be this type of person and a follower of Christ? You know, because they often come to that conversation with a certain preconceived notion of, you know, what a Jesus follower looks like,
right,
you know?
Right.
So.
What, talk a little bit more about capital punishment thing.
That's another podcast, right? No, well, I just
because that is unique, being in law enforcement.
Yeah,
that you maybe have a view that you don't necessarily agree with the capital punishment way of dealing with people. So, mm-hmm. what brought you to that decision?
So I studied criminology in college, and so I have kind of a two-prong sort of approach to the issue, and the first one being sort of a academic approach. And I don't think that in terms of, if you look at the research, that the research suggests that capital punishment does the things that people oftentimes think that it does, like deter crime. Just, you know, without going into a long, you know, explanation, I think that it's more costly. I think that if you look at how long it takes for people to be put to death, that it's not an effective deterrent. If you look back at when it was initially studied by early criminologists, they would say that the way we do it now is absolutely ineffective. So I have sort of that side of the argument in terms of what does it mean for society. And I think it traumatizes the victims and society. And so there's a whole host there. But then I approach it from, a spiritual or a faith. And again, I see things through how I understand and how I see Jesus. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when it's, you know, an issue that I'm facing in my own life, whether it's a small issue or a big issue, you think about, well, how would Jesus respond to this situation? Yeah. And, you know, to put it quite simply, do I think that Jesus, if we asked him to throw the switch on someone who's laying in a chamber with a needle in their arm that has probably created a heinous crime. And I'm not minimizing or dismissing the heinous, heinous crimes that people that are sitting on death row have committed, which is oftentimes people that are against capital punishment. People jump to that conclusion. Well, you don't really appreciate, you know, what these people have gone through.
Right.
I've seen firsthand what these people have gone through. So I get that, you know, as much as anybody can get it without experiencing it themselves. But again, going back to, do I think that Jesus would throw a switch on somebody? I just don't think that he would. I don't think that if you look at his teachings and his the way that he approached the people that were perceived as outcasts and sinners of his time, you know, he often had sort of a countercultural message, he kind of turned things up on its end. And I think that, I just think that that's...
You know, I usually like to expand, when we talk about pro-life in the church, oftentimes it just gets centered on, like, abortion.
Right. Right? That's another great...
And one of the ways that really opened me up to think differently about capital punishment was the story of Jesus and the woman who's going to be stoned to death.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps, and according to their law, they're right. supposed to stone her to death, right? Right. That was just, right. that was part exactly. of the Jewish law. And Jesus comes and tells them that he who has no sin cast the first stone.
Right.
And I think that's a very pro-life movement on Jesus' part, that mm-hmm. that's all part of it. I actually had to do in high school you had to do those debates,
mm-hmm.
and I don't remember if it was social studies or history, but you're given a topic and your team has to fight for it, this team against it. And at the time I thought differently. I really thought capital punishment would be a great way to mm-hmm. deter crime. But I got put on the side to argue against capital punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot of the same things you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That it's much more costly. And mm-hmm. All the other things that I wasn't ready to hear yet as a teenager. But it's an interesting conversation that we're not really having.
No, and I will tell you the other thing that we would be remiss if we don't bring up in this conversation are the inequalities that exist around capital punishment. Our justice system is, you know, I would submit, you know, one of the best in the world in terms of how it's structured and the protections and the things that we do, but it still has flaws. And oftentimes those flaws are related to socioeconomic factors. And no matter how well we try to make it just and perfect, we can't.
Right.
And so we accept that and we strive to make things better. And, you know, we try to make laws better and more applicable. But, you know, it's not perfect. The capital punishment is the ultimate sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I personally have a hard time saying, well, you know, we have a system that's imperfect, but we're going to exact a punishment that you can never turn back. You know, you look, especially in the last, you know, couple of decades, as DNA has become more of a effective, you know, forensic technology, there have been people that have been let off of death row, you know, that had the punishment been carried out as swiftly as people oftentimes call for it to be done, you would have potentially killed an innocent person. I mean, that's unfathomable.
Yeah. Well, and for one of the things that also helped me to think differently about the topic was thinking about, we're supporting the very thing that killed Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, that was the capital punishment back then, was crucifixion, and everybody got that. And I was sitting here supporting something that killed the God I believe in, right? Of course, it's a happy ending because Jesus rises again. But, like, if we always go to the crucifixion as this place of brutality and the way it's not supposed to be, but yet we're supporting something that's doing that same thing thousands of years later, it causes a tension and a rift that you can't really reconcile in your mind.
Yep.
So I'll get you out of hot water. Talking about, this isn't, you know, a political podcast. Maybe one day we'll get into there. So we don't want people to feel left out in any way, but talk a little bit more about how your faith influences your work. You're an FBI agent, SWAT, right? With FBI. So speak to that. Tell about kind of what you guys do. What's your role?
Yeah. So now I work on a violent crime task force, and I'm a SWAT operator. So, you know, my job brings me into contact with, a lot of, you know, victims of crime, and also suspects, or we call them subjects of crime. And probably one of the most interesting, intimate, and using it in a different kind of way that we oftentimes think about, parts of my job is when I sit across a table and I talk to someone who's committed a crime. And because I often tell them, and this is true, is that, you know, part of my job is to figure out what has happened, right? What the facts of the matter. But probably one of the most important parts of my job is to sit down with the person that's committed those crimes and find out why they've done that. And that experience of sitting down across from somebody and, you know, finding ways to relate with them and open up and give them sort of a permission or create an environment where they can share, you know, their own personal experience and their story, is really an interesting part of my job. And it's self-serving in many ways, or not self-serving, but serving to my cause, right? Because if I get them to admit facts of what they've done. But, you know, I do in my heart of hearts believe that there is a therapeutic a reconciliation that can occur in those situations. Because oftentimes, especially with, you know, oftentimes we tell people, you know, with FBI, when we sit down, we're asking you questions, we already know the answers, right? Because we've worked the case, we know, you know, we've already got you, kind of idea, which that's oftentimes the case. But understanding the things that influence people, and you'd be amazed at what people, it's like being in confession, you know, what people will share with you about their own personal struggles, their upbringing, you know, their most, closely guarded, secrets and struggles that they've had. So, you know, I see that as kind of a way that I can create space for people. And I feel that my faith and sort of the empathy and the sense of forgiveness, that we hear about every Sunday, I think some ways equips me to be able to create that space for people. Because I try not to come into it with a sense of judgment and try to be open to really hearing their story.
Well, it's kind of like the Bible talks about when darkness can't hide from the light, it can't overcome it. And I'm blanking on the scripture, but it's right after John 3:16, but it talks about how sinful men like to keep their sin in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
But once it comes to light, it cannot go back. Mm-hmm. And that's what comes to mind when I hear you talk about that, is they're confessing something. They're getting something out of the shadows.
Yes.
Something that they don't know that's wearing on them as much as it is.
Right. And the truth oftentimes does not set them free. Right. In the sense of the justice system.
Yeah.
But I do like to feel like, you know, that them coming to terms with what they've done, mm-hmm. and expressing the truth in that setting is the beginning of them starting to take responsibility for what they've done and hopefully turn their life around.
Right.
And you know, I'm not naive enough to think that everybody I talk to has a, you know, a total change of heart, but you know, I think that there are some that can happen. I would say that I have fewer opportunities to live out my faith as an FBI agent than I did as a state trooper, mm-hmm. because of the nature of, I was in contact with people so much as a trooper and was sort of a frontline officer, you know, so you're being called to situations and you're the first one to get there and sort through the chaos and interact with folks. And it was always, you know, I found it very rewarding. One like kind of quick story I share with folks that ask me about, you know, getting into law enforcement and, you know, if it's rewarding. So when I was a trooper, I had a take home police car so that I could drive off duty. So, you know, I would oftentimes drive it, you know, everywhere. And one time I was on my way back from Indianapolis. I think this was actually work related, but I was on my way back from Indianapolis on the highway, and I passed a car, and it was a long drive, right? But I knew that I should stop and go back and see. This was like the days when not everybody had cell phones too. So I turn around and I come back and I pull in behind the car, and it's a mother and she's got three kids, and one of the kids is like in the car seat. And so I get talking with her, and she says, you know, she's been sitting there for like 4 hours, and she's just like, I can't believe nobody has stopped. And she's like, you know, I need to get my kids off the highway. They haven't eaten. And so, you know, no big deal. I dealt with this many times. Get her car seat out. We load it in the squad car. We get her bay loaded up, seat belted in. I drive her, you know, to a diner, and she's able to call and gets help. But as she was getting out of the car at the diner, she turned around and she said, you know, she said, I've been praying, sitting here praying alongside the road, that God would send an angel to come help us after all this time had gone by. Mm-hmm. And she said, and then you showed up. And she said, you know, I'm so grateful for that. And it was just something that struck me. And not that I'm an angel by any stretch, or that anything I did that day was something another trooper would not have done. It was just like sort of, it's a situation or an event that's always kind of stuck with me, because that's really what I've always felt like that calling is, you know, my calling or the calling to law enforcement, is that you have the opportunity to be the hands and feet of Jesus, whether or not you see it that way, right? Because there's plenty of officers who aren't men and women of faith. But it's a unique opportunity for people of faith to really intervene in people's lives in small ways and big ways, and really live out your faith, you know. And so it was a really kind of a simple occurrence and something that happened many times. But just the fact that she had the thought to stop and turn around and say that, and then it kind of brought it back to me. Then it kind of hit me, you know.
You're the answer to her prayers.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and so I think that it was really kind of a rewarding thing for her, you know, to share with me, because it was something obviously I've always remembered, and it's kind of, you know, I'd like to think kind of symbolic of why I, you know, chose to do what I chose to do.
Right. So that's a good reminder to everybody that sometimes doing the smallest thing or the least you can do in a moment can actually mean something very big to that person that you just helped.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to kind of, you were talking about confession and
mm-hmm.
how people, you feel like you have a part in something therapeutic for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's different levels of freedom, right? Like, some people can be the most free people in the world. They can have all the money. There's no restrictions, mm-hmm. but they can feel so trapped mm-hmm. on the inside, mm-hmm. right? And so one of the things that I thought of when you were talking about that was somebody could be in a prison for the rest of their life,
mm-hmm.
but they can be the most whole they've ever been and the most free they've ever been because they have now faced consequences for the things they've done or admitted to things they've done. Everything's out in the open.
Right.
So that's a...
That's true. And I've had the opportunity to interview several, many, many inmates, you know, that have been former inmates that are new suspects or inmates that are currently in prison. And there is a sense of rawness to the emotions and the sense of like humanity and vulnerability, because oftentimes so much of what we use to sort of shield ourselves has been stripped away for them, mm-hmm. right? They are confronted with the fact that they live in a cell and they don't have all of the extraneous things that we have living on the outside. And they're also there because of something that they've done. And, you know, they're paying their price to society. And it oftentimes, you know, as with any of us, when we're confronted with a very challenging, difficult, life-altering experience, it draws them back to their faith. It makes them question or dig deeper on what is the meaning of life? Where do I find meaning and wholeness and, you know, love and grace? And, you know, many times that takes them to Jesus. And so you really hear some compelling stories talking to folks like that.
Great. This is good.
I'll share one other thing with you that has always struck me as an interesting sort of perspective because of my job. So as a trooper, I interacted with folks quite a bit alongside the highway, right? Stopping them for traffic violations. And when I would deal with somebody and go back to my car, I would oftentimes had two questions I would ask them. Do you know how fast you're going? And do you know what the speed limit is?
And they'd be like, I know exactly how fast I was going.
Well, sometimes. Oftentimes, you know, I mean, unfortunately, many of our instincts sometimes when we're in a difficult situation is to, you know, minimize or make up stories, right? Some folks would be straight with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I always kind of ask those two questions kind of to gauge, you know, where somebody was at, right? And I personally would have to try to make a decision like, how do I influence this person's behavior going forward, right? Is it going to require a $120 ticket? Or, you know, can I have a conversation with them, write them a warning, and maybe accomplish the same objective? Sometimes you'd stop somebody that's doing something totally ridiculous and they're getting a ticket, no questions asked. But I like to be a little way more flexible than that, right? And, you know, there were many, many occasions where I would stop somebody and interact with them. And they thought when I went back to my car, they were getting a ticket, no questions asked. And when I would come back with a warning, it would be like, you could just see him like, oh my gosh, are you kidding? You know, just like the weight of the world, you know, that coming off of them. And why I think that is significant is I've heard many sermons over the years about grace. And this, you know, to me, it was like my own experience of how grace works, right? You have someone, oftentimes ourselves, who we feel like we're deserving of, you know, punishment, or we've screwed up and, you know, we're beyond saving or beyond love, right? And Jesus comes to us and says, no, there's nothing, you know, you can do or say that's going to change that love that I have for you. And it's not a direct correlation between my traffic stop analogy, but it was always, you know, I always kind of enjoyed seeing that in people because, and I often thought like, it's kind of a small way that you see how someone can get what they perceive as unmerited favor for, even though they've done something wrong.
Right.
Or not necessarily favor, but some kind of absolution. You know, even though they know they're deserving of the punishment that they think is coming, and then they don't get that.
Right.
And just that sort of like relief that comes from that, you know, I think is kind of a very small sort of taste of what grace can be.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Now here's a hard hitting question. Okay. A year and a half ago, I was on, I think, was it Ridgegate Road? It might have been Castle Pines when you go to Parker. You get off the road.
Castle Pines Parkway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's 45 through there until you get to Parker, which is super slow for that, that area. And this car was speeding up on me, like was almost bumper to bumper. And so I decided to go faster because I was like, I don't want to deal with this guy. But it was a police officer. And then they turned the lights on as soon as I was, I mean, I was going a little bit over the speed limit anyway. I was going probably 50.
Okay.
And then they pulled me over because I was just like, who is this guy? It was dark out. And then I got a ticket. Is that a method that they use?
No, I can't imagine. No. So here's the reality. Here's the reality. If you, like, I did traffic enforcement. That wasn't the bulk of what I did, but it was something, you know, it was part of my job, and it was something I did to, you know, when I wasn't handling other calls. There are plenty of folks that are doing silly stuff out there that you don't need to go out and force the issue, was my experience. Now, I can't speak for this officer, but...
it's Douglas County. Well, to kind of end us with our interview here, I just want to ask some simple questions. Like, what's your favorite movie?
The first one that comes to mind is Amazing Grace.
Yeah, the...
About William Wilberforce.
Yeah.
Yes. It's an amazing story, in the fact that it's based, you know, partially on real folk, well, very much on real folks, and how they were moved by, you know, their faith and the conversion, you know, of, I forget the guy's name, the guy that became the priest, the one that wrote Amazing Grace.
You know, I saw that movie 11 years ago now.
I forget. I mean, he's a well-known name. But the guy that wrote the song, Amazing Grace, you know, was a slave trader himself, right? And then he has a conversion experience in his life, and he becomes, I don't know if he was actually a priest, but he became affiliated with the church and worked in the church, you know, until he died. And, you know, I think it's just a great story. If somebody, if you people out there have not seen that movie, it's a great movie. And dealing with slavery, which is one of the great travesties, I think, of
human history.
Human history, yes.
Yeah. It's happened in all each century of human history.
Yeah, and the courage that William Wilberforce had to take on that issue, you know, a very sort of countercultural, and, you know, was very unpopular. And, you know, the fact that the country eventually voted to end it, you know, it was really against their self-interest in many ways. When you look at the economics of slavery and the sugar cane trade, and so
it's interesting when you look back at history, the people we do remember are the ones that were going counter to what everybody was thinking at the time, which is a lesson for today. But so that's your favorite movie. Good.
Yeah, that's the first one that came to mind. I mean, I like some other ones, but they're not quite, you know, like I like Bad Boys, right? Bad Boys 1 and 2.
I probably can't share one of my favorites of all time, but my favorite director is Martin Scorsese, and he's done quite a few of some brutal movies. But
we just watched one of his recent one. I don't remember what it was. I don't remember the name of it, but
I remember what it was about.
Oh, it was Silence.
Silence. That's a heavy movie.
That's very heavy.
Yeah. It's not one you go in with popcorn.
No, that was a rough movie. Yeah.
But it's good.
It's good in the sense that it creates a lot of, you know, makes you think about things and draws out. Again, same thing, consequences, right? The consequences of your faith, of living out your faith, and how that puts you at odds with people sometimes.
Yeah. Scorsese said that movie is kind of like this. It's the journey of his faith, I think. He was going to go to the priesthood before he went into film. And in a lot of his films, you can kind of see the Catholic guilt that he has, and the stark, well, I think what I appreciate about his movies that there isn't this stark contrast between the good guys and the bad guys, but it's kind of like they're all gray.
Yes.
You know, but Silence is one of those movies that kind of goes further with those questions about what is good and what's not, and, you know, even keeping the faith and trying to not deny Christ, is that creating good or is that creating more bad? And so we could have our own podcast about movies and we could talk.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that issue in and of itself, I think, has been something I've had to deal with, you know, in my line of work too, is we oftentimes try to simplify things, right? Like, those are the bad guys over there. Those are the ones that are in prison, but...
Yeah.
You know, as you know, when you sit in rooms with folks and you talk to them about their stories, you realize that, you know, had I not had a couple people that intervened in my life, you know, I came from, you know, a family where, you know, my parents divorced and, you know, I had a pretty easy upbringing, but you could point to certain things and say, you know, said, well, you know, it could have created a lot of problems in a young person's life. But, you know, I was fortunate to have good people that were around me and, you know, grew up in a safe neighborhood. But, you know, when you start to really delve into people's lives, though, it becomes much more gray, you know, in terms of the circumstances, the influences, the things that people encounter and how that affects where they ultimately land, you know.
Isn't it amazing when you think about it, like how fragile it all is? Like, one decision can lead to something else.
Right.
And some of those people who commit crimes, it's just been one bad decision after another that has led to it.
Right.
It's
and don't get me wrong. There's absolutely personal accountability and decisions and freedom. And, you know, so I'm not letting them off the hook. But what I'm saying is when we talk about things, you know, I think especially as people of faith, where we recognize the impact of sin and struggle and that these all have to be parts of the conversation. You know, when you're talking about issues of crime or issues in society, we're remiss if we don't recognize that we are not all created equal.
Right.
We're not all created equal in terms of the schools that we get to go to, the communities we're raised in.
Families are born
into. Exactly. Yeah. And that has a huge impact on many issues, but I've seen firsthand the impact it has on whether someone ends up sitting next to me on one side of the table or sitting across from me being interviewed.
Good.
If you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Well, that's kind of time for us. We've talked about a lot. Maybe we could do a second one at some point because I think a lot of people are going to be interested in about your position in law enforcement and how your faith affects that. And I think we, especially with all the things going on with law enforcement, especially in the Denver area lately, people are a lot more sensitive to it.
Yeah.
And so thanks for sharing a little bit about your faith and
sure.
Your
work. Thank you. Thank you for asking me. I'm humbled that you would consider me for this. So.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great, but I'm also getting hungry, so I'm gonna end this, and we can. And you can eat. Too.
I don't want to get in between you and a meal. So.
All right, thanks, Nate.
Sure.